Welcome to Paranormal Heart, a place where people can talk about their paranormal experiences. With your host, Kat Ward.
Hi, I'm Kat Ward. Welcome to Paranormal Heart. I'm Kat Ward, and this is Paranormal Heart, a place where people can talk about their paranormal experiences. Thank you so much for joining me once again. This is episode 2. I'm so very excited, and I'm really appreciative that anybody's listening, because you never know. So I'd like to introduce my next guest, Aelita Kinley. Hey, Aelita.
Hello. Hey.
How are you doing?
Hi. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. So let's talk about your experiences.
What would you like to know?
Anything and everything. If you grew up in haunted house, or if you've had experiences at a workplace, or, you know, driving down a road and you saw a ghost, anything.
Okay, well, I live in Nebraska, and Nebraska has it's kind of unique. It was like a territory until like 1862, and then 1867 is when it became a state in the United States. So it's fairly young. Mm-hmm. It has a really old history with Native Americans. The Great Plains Indians were in this area for thousands and thousands of years, and they believed in the spirits of the land. And in fact, Nebraska is Oto for flat water. Because of the Platte River, and they believe that this river housed all kinds of spirits that lived underground and in the water, and it has a unique, because we had a lot of immigrants come from all over the world.
Right.
In 1862, they opened a Homestead Act, and 40%, Nebraska was one of the 30 states in the Homestead Act that 40% of their land went to immigrants.
No way.
So we had immigrants come from all over the world, Germany, Sweden, Ireland, you name it, they came here, and they brought their cultures with them, and they brought their spirits with them and their beliefs. And a lot of being a paranormal investigator in Nebraska has to deal with, you have to learn about different people's cultures, because they believe, from Native Americans to, Germans, Russians, we had a large community of Russians here in Hastings, Nebraska. And I don't know if you've ever read anything about Russian folklore, but they, when they build a house, they invoke a house spirit called a Domovoy. Mm-hmm. I hope I'm pronouncing right. Hopefully there's no Russians listening. But anyway, it's kind of like a house fairy, and takes care of their house, and they really believed in this. It's really steeped down deep in Russian folklore about this, and whether there is real Domovoy, I have no idea for sure, but they certainly believed it. And I've investigated houses that, I don't know, it fits the description of what's going on in there. Hmm. From little black darkened shadows to these little creatures were supposed to be like shapeshifters.
Right.
And this one lady in particular that we investigated her house, she would sit there and say, well, there's a strange cat in my house, and I have no idea where this cat come from. Huh. And she even seen one of the things, she even seemed like a note. She described it as a note, which fits the description of this. She seen it sitting on her dresser, staring at her.
Wow.
And she had no idea that her house was once owned by Russians and built.
Mm-hmm.
So she had no idea about all this folklore. So it's kind of fascinating. And we go to German households, and in fact, one German household, I think I told you before, we were investigating. I had the wrong name.
Right.
The person that lived there in the house.
Yep.
And we were going around trying to get EVPs, and we were sitting there going, well, you know, I think it was John Peters, are you here? And Stefan, we got back an EVP of her. German saying, calling this a dumb call. Well, I had the wrong person. And he kind of fit, you know, because he was like, don't cough.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that is so fascinating. That's the first time I've ever gotten an EVP in another language. And then we had one EVP was like a whole sentence in German. And I don't remember what it said now. We took it to somebody and had it translated. And I think it was something. He was asking where something was or where he was or something.
No way.
And it was just fascinating. And I've dealt with Irish households and stuff, and they very much believe in house spirits.
Yep.
And stuff. And it's just a hodgepodge of everything. Oh, around Palmer, Nebraska, we did an investigation there. Now, Palmer, Nebraska is kind of unique. It is right there up on the Loup River,
mm-hmm.
and Loup River was home to the Skitty Pawnee. The Skitty Pawnee practice human sacrifices.
Oh.
And it's called the Morning Star Ritual. And they would capture like a enemy, like a woman from the enemy that they were fighting,
mm-hmm.
or maybe even a settler woman. I think the last sacrifice they know about was 1847, but I'm sure it went on after that because it was pretty steeped in their folklore. But
yeah.
Anyway, right in this area at Palmer, Nebraska, this is exactly where this huge, huge skitty Pawnee village was. And they would do this Morning Star ritual, and they would shoot this woman full of holes and drag her around the field.
Wow.
And let her bleed all over the field because they were farmers. They believed in the corn gods and spirits and stuff. Well, one of the houses we did was a farmhouse over there by Palmer, and it was really haunted. And I ended up contacting a druid and
really?
Asking, what do we do? I did Ian Corrigan from ADF. He's mm-hmm. a druid sorcerer. And I asked him, I go, look, you know, this is a supernatural problem. I probably need a supernatural answer. And he told me, he says, well, make an offering to the spirits of land and ask them to pass this farm by.
Hmm.
And I did. I that's what I did. I took corn whiskey because they believed in corn gods. So I took corn whiskey and I took tobacco and I took herbs. And I apologized. I said, look, I am sorry that we disturbed your graves, because they did. The farmers in that region, they would dig up these Native American bones and they were selling them.
Wow, really?
And so, yeah, this happened, you know, like 1910 or 1920, I mean, years ago, before like the University of Nebraska like said, no, this is a cultural area.
Right.
But I just apologized to these poor spirits. And you know what? It worked.
Oh, good.
The people in this farmhouse, you know, knock on wood here, they haven't had any more problems. And so that was one time, I used like a druid sorcerer. And I know it sounds kind of woo, but he had the right idea. So
what were these people experiencing exactly?
Well, it was some teenagers. Well, they're not really, I shouldn't call them, I want to call them teenagers, but I'm going to say they're like 21, 22. Mm-hmm. But anyway, their folks had bought them this house. And, well, bought the house and rented and had their son and his college friends, they live there. But anyway, they would have girls come to the house and these girls would get touched. They could see black shadows and they hear these drums outside. You know, and then it was really weird. Then you had this like fog mist and we come across cornfield and we actually witnessed this. This was kind of cool. And I tried to videotape it. You know, when we look back on that videotape, it was nothing like what we see. And sometimes I think that you're not meant to take this stuff.
Yep.
You know, and it's just like kind of a, it was a weird experience. We stood there and we watched this fog come down and moved across the top of the corn and stuff. And then just like, poof, disappeared.
So what time of day? What time of day would that fog happen? Would
when we seen it, it was probably maybe 7 o'clock at night and stuff. And two, it could be because it was a warm day and they're irrigating, and this could have been some kind of mist from the irrigation. I will confess that because I don't know enough about the atmospheric conditions if that would happen or not, but. This is exactly what they said was going on. And they would have different things in the house move and stuff. And they just had all kinds of weird things happen. And they were trying to blame it on this old man that had passed away in the house. And I guess I didn't get that when I was there. And we didn't get an EVP to let us think that. We got some strange, like, I don't know. They weren't, I don't speak Pawnee. I suppose if we took the EVP, maybe we'd get, you know, maybe they could translate it.
That would be interesting to find out.
It was kind of, it sounded like gibberish to me.
Right.
And stuff. And then we did use a ghost box down there in the basement, and they were getting like some weird words too. So, you know, I don't know, you know, what they were saying for sure, but I had tried playing some Pawnee music and everything else to try to trigger some stuff.
Right. Grab their attention.
And I think whatever we did worked, you know, for them. And I was glad for that because they were pretty freaked out. And their parents were pretty upset, too. They thought their kids were, like, smoking marijuana or something.
Yeah.
In fact, after we staged the whole house, the mother came in, I knew I smoked marijuana. And I said, no, it was sage. Because she, in fact, they just thought their kids were all stoned out of their minds and seeing stuff. And, but they were pretty freaked out enough to call us. And they, you know, sometimes when, you know, people, they were freaked out enough that they didn't even want to stay there. They didn't even want to know what we found. They just wanted it gone. And that tells me that that's pretty real. When they're not trying to get attention, they just want the thing gone.
Right. Yep. Have you ever been to any places where you've had, like, really bad experiences where the feeling was just, you know, like really negative feelings and you really don't want to go there?
I guess I'm more fascinated by the paranormal. I've had a couple of incidents where it was really uncomfortable. And one was really strange for me because I don't really see spirits. It's not something I see. I make most of my connection when I do through history and stuff.
Right.
Now, my mother, she saw spirits. But I guess I don't really have that gift like she did.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were doing an investigation in Culbertson, Nebraska, which is in Hooker County, it's like further out west and stuff. And one of the houses we went into, I walked in. And there was this girl standing there, and she did not look right to me. It was rather disturbing to see her because she almost looked like, well, her face almost looked like it was porcelain, like a porcelain doll.
Hmm.
She looked like one of the porcelain dolls, but she was short. And she was holding this other, like, doll by the hair. And I didn't really notice what the doll looked like. I just was taken back by her. And I looked around at their investigators, and nobody was noted. Nobody saw her. She was just standing, and I'm like, okay, you know.
Was she staring right at you?
She was... Yeah, we made eye contact. I'll say that. But then she was gone. I never seen her the rest of the night or anything else. But this house was kind of disheveled, or however you want to say it, was really, really messy. I mean, the lady, she looked like she was pretty stressed out that it had called us there, because she said her husband had seen, he'd always seen spirits, and that their house, they had all this crazy activity. And when we went upstairs and stuff, you could see that her kid was playing tic-tac-toe with something, you know. Either was playing tic-tac-toe by herself on the wall, but though there was writing on the walls, the beds weren't made, there was clothes shoved everywhere. It looked like, I don't know if you believe in demons or whatever, but it looked like a form of oppression that this lady must have been going through. I don't like to use the word demons or whatever, but whatever was happening in that house was not having a good effect on the family.
Right.
And after we had done the investigation, and that was one of the times in that house that I've seen actual ghost box give a full name.
Really?
We had the full name, David T. Booker.
Huh.
And it was plain as day. It wasn't, and it was over so many, you know, scams that it's just something that you can't ignore or can't say that's radio noise, because it was in one voice.
Right.
And so I ended up going back and I'm looking it up, and we also got the name Smith.
Hmm. Huh.
And I had the impression, you know, from that girl, I had the impression that her name was Mary. So I looked for a Mary Smith, and I looked for David T. Booker. Now, Mary Smith, she was easy to find. I found her in the cemetery in Culberson and stuff. I found, and she was like 3 years old when she died.
Oh.
Now, this girl that I seen looked a little older than 3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
She was short and everything. She looked older than 3 years old. But there was a story on the Find a Grave thing. And you can look her up. Mary Smith, Culberson, Nebraska. You can look her up. And there's a story with her that when they had to reinter this grave when they built the highway, that when they dug her up some 50 years after she died, she was in a glass coffin, and she was laying there perfectly preserved, like she was sleeping. And guess what? She was holding a doll.
Oh. Wow.
I was just like, whoa. And then I ended up contacting a lady who had wrote the story and stuff. And her father, who was the person who dug this little Mary Smith up, was haunted by this child, the image of this child for his rest of his life. He even talked about it on his deathbed.
Wow.
So, I don't know what it was I seen, and I don't know if I care to know, because I had, like, nightmares afterwards, so I'm not sure. And I wasn't the only one. There was another lady investigator who had nightmares, too. So, I'm not sure what we've seen. Well, what I seen and what she experienced, and I'd like to think that no little kid is evil like that. No little 3-year-old. So
right. Yeah.
I don't know what it was. I don't. You know.
Hmm.
Because it had to be something pretty extreme for me to see it, because I just don't see them. I've had one other experience that I've seen something like that, but that was, it was not like her. And it was just a weird experience. But anyway, this David T. Booker, I went to look him up, and he was a Civil War guy. He didn't die anywhere near Culpeper, Nebraska. He died in Illinois and stuff. And I'm going, well, that's weird. Mm. I mean, because there isn't that many David T. Bookers. And I knew that they had a regiment station in Culberson because it was close to, they had like cattle drives that went through there.
Right. Yep.
And so I got, well, maybe he was related to somebody there. And so when I'm looking at, I just put Booker in the, an ancestry. I use the ancestry.com and Booker in Culberson, and comes up this Mary Booker, and she was married to this livery stable guy in Culberson, Nebraska. And so then I go, well, could that be? And then I go, sure as crap, David T. Booker was her brother.
Oh, wow.
And then I'm going, well, I, you know, that house has been there for quite a while and stuff, and I don't think it ever been a livery stable. But when they went back to do, like, the reveal or whatever and tell these couple what we'd found, the couple confessed that when they dug their garden up, it had all kinds of horseshoes in the back. So that livery stable must have been
right there. It was there, yep.
And I just thought that was just too much of a coincidence. I mean, for me, not to say a ghost box. We got that name through the ghost box, and you can't say that the ghost box don't work.
Yep.
But I think it works with people that have like medium estate.
Yeah.
Yes.
It works. It works a lot better for some people and not for others. Like, it doesn't work that great for me.
It doesn't work that great for me.
No.
I mean, I've never got, but this lady that used to be belonged to a paranormal group, she was just gifted like that. And she had almost like a childlike enthusiasm when she used it and stuff. And I really do believe that she is some kind of digital medium, because I've never heard a ghost box give answers like it works for her. And that damn ghost box that she used, it was an old Frank's box. Hmm. It was the old, like one of the first ones that came out. And it would ask for her. I swear, it would ask for her when she wasn't around. It would be like, Sue, Bob, and her husband's name was Bob.
Right.
And then you would go, Sue, where's Bob? Where's Sue? And Stephanie, and I think that she just connected to whatever was in that, or it was her psychic ability that was projecting through the ghost box. I have no idea. And you never will know. I mean, is it the person who's using it, psychic ability, mm-hmm. or is it the person, or is it the spirit psychic ability?
I firmly believe it's something similar. You know how some people just attract children or animals for whatever reason?
Yeah.
I firmly believe that happens in the spirit world as well. You can go on investigations and some people won't have any experiences at all, but yet other people will say, I was touched, or I heard this, or I saw this, or they're holding the ghost box and they're getting so many responses. So to me, I firmly believe that it has something to do with that. It's something similar.
Oh, yeah. These ladies are some of the most gifted spirit communicators that I've ever seen. Hmm. We got all kinds of things. And stuff, I connect during through the history and stuff, but they could connect, you know, on EVPs, they could connect, you know, with using the ghost box. Hmm. And I just think, you know, that some people are just gifted that way.
Agreed. Yeah. What other experiences have you had?
What would you like to know about? I've had a lot that I'm...
Have you ever, like, growing up, have you ever seen anything in your house?
Well, I want to say, my mom, she always, she always seen spirits and stuff. And so we would have weird things happen in our house growing up. And it used to scare the crap out of me and stuff. I'd run, jump in bed with my mom and sleep with my mom. And, but I can remember seeing like shadow people and stuff. And it would be, I'd be in bed and I had my little night light and stuff, and I'd be sitting and I'd see them like move and stuff. And I'd be out of bed and run straight to my mom's room and jump in bed. And my mom would say, they're not going to bother you. They're not going to hurt you. She says, if they talk to you, don't listen to them and stuff. And so I think from an early age, I had the impression, don't talk to them, don't listen to them, you know.
Right.
But I always knew they were spirits, always knew.
Do you feel like your mom was trying to dismiss them, or she was just trying to, she in her way, acknowledge that you were actually seeing this?
Well, I think my mom, I really don't know. I know my mom, she used to, her and our housekeeper, our housekeeper lost both their children in an accident.
Hmm.
And my mom and housekeeper, I think, would contact spirits, but it was mainly kept away from me and stuff. I was mainly kept out of that part.
Right.
And stuff. I didn't know, basically, until I was older, what was going on with my mom. And that's when, you know, she would see him, you know, she was in a nursing home or the old folks home before the actual nursing home. She always talked about seeing spirits walk up and down the halls and everything. And I used to attribute to, okay, mom's getting older and it's slipping, you know,
yeah.
But as I got older, I was like, okay, I know my mom wasn't nuts, and I know what was going on and stuff, because I would see a lot of the same stuff, too, as I was older. And my kids always knew it. They always knew Grandma always seen spirits. Mom told us a story when she first seen spirits when she was young. And I told you this story before, but she had a bell in a hog pen at her parents. She was like maybe 10 years old. And this was probably 1935, maybe. And my aunt, Cora, she ran back to the house to get Grandpa. And my mom says that somebody grabbed her, picked her up out of the hog pen because the hogs were going to turn and try to get her.
Yep.
And picked her up out of the hog pen and set her down. And smiled at her and just walked off.
Oh.
When she tried to tell her father about it, he went walking all over the farm. He was going to thank this guy for helping my mom. And later on at supper time, my mom was describing this gentleman to her father and mother and stuff. And she was talking about, oh, he had this gold watch and stuff. She just remembered the gold watch. And he was dressed like this, had a straw hat on and everything. And come to find out, after my mom, she said when she got older, she seen the picture. It was her grandfather.
Oh, no way.
That would have been my great-great-grandfather.
Yeah.
And stuff. So it was... He actually pulled her out of the hog pen and he just disappeared.
Definitely ancestors watching out.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, I've had kind of a strange life.
Yeah, it's something that hasn't really, I've been too fascinated, really, to be afraid. Not that I haven't had times where I'm like, holy crap. But it's more of a fascination that takes over.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, when something happens, I don't get freaked out about it. I'm like, okay, did that just really happen? Did I just see that? You know, it's more takes you by surprise. I guess I don't like to ghost hunt at night for the reason I don't like to be startled, because I have been startled before and screamed and stuff. But I had a good reason. I'm Steph. I was at the Squirrel Cage Gel in Council Bluffs, Iowa. Mm-hmm. And it's a type of gel that one man could turn all of this gel cells and stuff and people and let people out. It was like a pie-shaped gel cell.
Yep.
So it went straight up in there, and we were walking around that thing, and I, like I said, I don't like to go hunt at night for this very reason. I look up and I see this arm sticking out of one of the gel cell things. Oh. I scream. I take some by surprise. I'm just like, ah! And stuff. Well, here was just rubber arm.
It oh, no.
It was terrific. They were showing how prisoners would stick their arm out.
Yeah.
And get it broke so they could go to the infirmary.
Oh.
But they returned the gel cell. And stuff. And it was just a dummy and stuff. But it, yeah.
Well, you don't expect it. Yeah.
Yeah. And see, at night, it takes away one of your basic senses, your eyesight. And so you're like heightened, like, oh gosh, something's going to grab me out in the middle of the night and stuff, or out of the darkness. And I don't like that feel.
Yeah.
And stuff, because you can investigate during the day just as fine, and you're
agreed.
Not going to trip over people's crap, and your cameras are going to work better, and actually most, well, I'm not going to say, I don't think any statistics have ever been taken on, but for most that I've ever heard, people's sightings are during the day, mm-hmm. and unless you have, like, something that they claim or the people you're helping or whether claim that something is happening at night, I just don't see any reason to go tromping around in the dark with flashlights tripping over people's furniture
yep.
and screaming, and no, it's not helping anybody.
I feel if someone's having the experiences during the daytime, that's the time that you should be investigating.
Yep.
Not necessarily yep. at night, but at night. You know, with that being said, I do believe that it's usually quieter at night, so you're not going to have as much interference on your equipment, like hearing a car go by or whatever.
But, that is true there and stuff. I mean, I can see that point too, but...
Yeah, just trying to keep the contamination down, but no, I totally agree. It doesn't matter what time of day or night, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. This one lady, Chattern, Nebraska, they have this, I'm trying to think of what it's called. It's like a haunted inn there or whatever. It's hotel, Old Street Hotel or some Old Street Inn or whatever. But anyway, the old lady runs that. I went up there and I go, well, do you have a haunted room or or something? You know, I mean, that's supposed to be more haunted. She goes, well, hun, ghosts don't know that there's walls and stuff. There is no just haunted room. They go all over. And I just loved her. I was like, oh, God, this woman's a riot. She goes, they don't know it's nighttime or daytime. They just show up when they show up.
Yep.
And I said, well, yeah, that's true. It's like nothing like getting schooled by an old lady.
But she didn't look at you like you had three heads when you asked that question, though.
Oh, no. She has no problem with telling you her place is haunted and stuff, and that it doesn't matter what time of day, or it doesn't matter what room. She goes, if they want to come in there, they're going to come in there. They go right through the walls.
Yeah.
I was laughing.
So have you had more residual investigations, or do you actually have, like, actual interaction?
Well, I think a lot is residual and stuff, and a lot is, I believe people can manifest their own fears, and if they get all freaked out or something, so pretty soon they're going to start seeing that something that they're freaked out about.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't say every place is haunted. I would say there's a lot of spirits, and Steph and I kind of find them when I'm doing research and stuff. That's how I connect with the spirit world.
Mm-hmm.
you know, when I'm doing research, I have some, you know, just kind of this little signal goes off in my head and says, hey, I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm the person you're looking for and stuff. And usually I'm right. I'm dead on the money. So I just, that's the way I connect. And I know I can connect that way. And that's the way I do it. But do I think that this, that there are spirits around? Yes. But do I think they're interacting with people? No. There's a lot of times I don't think they're interacting with people. And Steph, I think that people, it's their own psychic gifts that they don't know that they have or whatever, because it's a form of ESP if you see a spirit.
Right.
It's you. It's you. And I think that they might see them, but I don't think they're interacting with them and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they're haunted or their house is haunted, because people can, have you ever noticed that some people can live in a house and never have any problem?
Yep.
And then somebody else buy that house and this the most haunted damn place they've ever been.
Yes.
And simple as them. It's them. It's their gift that they have to say, okay, you know, back off. You know, that they probably are seeing these spirits that are in the house, but these spirits are not interacting with them. And it might be something residual that displays, you know, in the house.
Mm-hmm.
It might not have anything to do with spirits. It has everything to do with their gifts. Hmm. You know, each individual's gifts.
Yep. Because we all have different ones.
Oh, I believe that completely. I believe everybody has some form of ESP, and some people are like savants. You got people like Amy Allen. They're a savant of their, you know, ability. Mm-hmm. But I think everybody is capable of it. And witches, for one, they have, you know, somebody has been raised like pagan or mm-hmm. something and stuff. They don't know they're not supposed to see spirits. They don't know, and they have a lot more experiences.
They're more open, more in tune.
Yeah, because they don't know they're not supposed to be. Just like even the Aborigines, you know, the Aborigines can connect over long distances
mm-hmm.
because they've never been told that that's not possible.
Yeah.
And stuff, that's part of their culture. And I think the human mind is remarkable.
Oh, indeed it is. Okay, well, we're coming up on the end, believe it or not.
What do you want to know about?
Have you ever had any places that you worked at where people, you know, you had experiences at a workplace?
Well, where I work now is called Werner Construction.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an old man that used to work there, and I knew his daughter pretty well. Well, it would be his stepdaughter, but his name was Percy, and he used to work on the vehicles. And he'd be, while he's working on a vehicle underneath one, he'd have big old cigars in his mouth. And every now and then, and I've had people who didn't even know about Percy or even know anything about him smoking a cigar or anything, say, do you smell cigar smoke?
Wow. Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, yeah, I know exactly who that is. That's old Percy. And yeah, he smoked these stinking rotten cherry cigars.
Yeah.
And they're, if you've ever smelled one, and it's a distinguishable smell.
Yep.
And yeah, so I think Percy every now and then is at work and stuff. I've never seen him, but I've definitely smelled that stinking rotten cherry cigar.
still working, I guess.
But that's about the only real place that I can think. Well, I'll take it back. When I was younger, I worked at Bethage Mission in Axtell, Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an old mission. It used to be a Catholic mission. And I'm not quite sure of the year it was built. I know it was built in the late 1800s and stuff. But that place has a long history of people seeing the nun up in the church loft. and stuff. I never have seen her, but I've heard a lot of different stories about this nun that they would see and everything, because it's a home for like mentally handicapped people. I've always wanted to investigate there. I always wanted to investigate that. It would be called the Hastings Regional Center, but it used to be an asylum. It used to be on the Ingleside home for the mentally insane. And they had criminally insane out there. In fact, they had one lady who was buried out there. And we have investigated across from where her parents lived and stuff. But I just know that woman's walking this earth. But anyway, her name was Della Seidel, and she was a serial killer. She killed her mother-in-law. She killed her husband.
Wow.
She killed one of her kids. She killed her neighbor's kids. And yeah, she killed like 9 different people.
Holy.
And back then they just, I think it was 1922. And you can look her up on Murderpedia or whatever. But, she just said, well, I like to go to funerals, and they put her in the home permanently insane. She died out here in Hastings, Ingleside, and she's buried out there at the cemetery.
Right.
And stuff, but they won't let you investigate. I guess there's something to do with the state of Nebraska still owns it, and they won't let anybody out there to investigate. They don't want the insurance. They just say the buildings are unsafe. But there is buildings out there you could investigate. In fact, there's an old prison out there, but they won't let you investigate.
I wonder why.
Yeah, I think it has to do with something about the insurance and maybe they're. I think people's opinions is. Have to do with paranormal TV and stuff, whether it's good or bad. They were kind of like, oh, you're one of them type people.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, no, I just want to go take some pictures and see if I can get some EVPs. I don't want to bring in a camera crew and half a dozen people to stomp through your buildings. And
Too many people out there now that think that the TV shows is they're going to get rich and famous, and I just want to find out what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and paranormal TV probably is a bad model for people to follow. I mean, if I was to offer advice to anybody to a paranormal investigating team or whatever. Take some classes, read some books, look at the SPR, you know. I mean, there's a lot of good information. And they've been actually ghost hunting since the late 1800s. And there is the SPR was founded in 1892 or 1882, I can't remember exactly, but anyway, they have case files upon case files of experiments and journals and everything, you know, of old ghost hunters, Henry Price, Arthur Conan Doyle,
yes.
Or whatever.
Sir Arthur Conan Doyle,
and read them, you know, and stuff. Them should be the heroes of the paranormal, not some of these teenage people.
Yes, agreed.
Hans Holzer. I mean, read some of his books. I mean, he wrote a really good one called The Ghost Hunter. Lloyd Arbach. He's got some awesome books out, you know, and stuff. I took one of his classes through the Rhine Institute.
Oh, really?
He has a wealth of information and stuff. And in fact, the reason why people use the EMF detectors and walk around the buildings is probably due to Lloyd Arbach. He did it once on a TV show, you know, and actually they didn't even use them to detect those. They're just to detect whether the conditions are causing this paranormal, you know, phenomenon to happen to people or people to think, you know.
Yeah.
Because they're not to detect ghosts. And this is all stuff you learn to these classes and stuff, and you learn about the wealth of information that they do know about and stuff. And you learn about the power of the human mind. I mean, the lady that there's one story about, and it's well documented, this lady with whose gold leaf from her face and stuff, and they think it was her. She manifested this to herself, and they think it was to do with she always had psychic ability, but her husband would say, well, we can't make no money off of that, you know, why don't you do something useful and stuff, and then she started using this like gold leaf stuff.
Wow.
And the story about that, these are all case files that you can find on the SPR, or even Duane the Rhine Institute has wealth information. You know, I mean, just like the thing about people affecting like EVP recorder and stuff. They know that people can affect random generators,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it might be their psychic ability that's imprinting on the tape, or running the ghost box, or moving the Ouija board thing, or causing poltergeist-like activity in the house. Mm-hmm. It might be something to do with them.
It might.
Or the people you're investigating, you know, it's fascinating.
I totally agree, though, for the piece of advice that you give for don't just go according to what the TV shows are doing. Actually, I used to laugh at people who are actually giving courses, but now I don't really laugh at them so much because so many people are guiding their information, taking all their information on the TV shows. And yeah, it is somewhat like that. But take a course and actually learn how to use your equipment. And just because you're getting EMF detection doesn't mean that there's a ghost. You know, you got to learn what you're actually detecting. Read books, yeah. Like you said.
To be quite honest, they don't even know what a ghost is.
Yeah.
I know. I call them, what I like to call them is conscious ball of energy. I mean, that's the way I see it. It's conscious energy. But they don't have anything that actually detects ghosts because they don't know what ghosts are made of. And these people, just like we were talking before, these people that say they got scratched by ghosts or whatever, well, ghosts don't have any hands, so they can't scratch you.
Mm.
You know, if they're scratching you or doing something, then they're doing it through psychokinesis.
Mm-hmm.
It's mind over matter. And that is the same thing that can happen, you know, I mean, you can do the same thing. And if they're moving something, they have learned to do PK.
Mm-hmm.
And because they attribute, you know, well, I'm not going to say all, but they attribute a lot of these poltergeist phenomenon. They'll attribute to maybe you have an adolescent kid, you have somebody stressed out in your house, or something like that. Well, I think it can be a ghost being stressed out, too.
Agreed.
You know, and you don't know whose PK it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can, and sometimes you can stop. If it is a person's PK, they have discovered it. You know, once a person realizes, oh, I might be doing this, well, then poof, it stops. It stops within a few months. PK attribute to a person,
mm-hmm.
it'll stop within a few months. It might start up again after a few years. Now, if it's PK attributed to a spirit, you might always have like doors opening or some falling off the cupboard or mm-hmm. something like that. One of the most fascinating, I would say, cases that they had that they talked to, that Lloyd Arbrock talked about, was that this boy, they got contacted. He was in New York because all of a sudden he would rain in the house. There would be water condensation all over the house. They couldn't figure out why it was raining on this boy. And stuff. So they went and investigated and stuff, and through counseling and stuff, they found out that this boy who belonged on the swim team, he loved to swim and everything, but he did not like to compete competition swim.
Really?
And it was stressing him out so bad because his parents were like, oh, be on something, do better, you know, and just pressuring him that he was causing it to rain in the house. Huh. It would rain on him. Water would start pouring on him. And as soon as he figured out that he didn't have to, as soon as they figured out that that was the problem, the whole problem stopped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. And we have like bunches of case files like this. And that's what people are not reading or not getting this kind of information. And all they get is the TV demons here. Demons are doing this. And demons are doing that. And
yeah.
No, that's not helping people.
No.
And it's not going to help a family to freak them out so bad that they think demons are all over them.
Exactly.
And stuff and going through exorcisms and, you know.
I actually heard one investigator on a talk show, on a podcast one time, say that an investigation they did, this person's toilet was the portal to hell, and I couldn't listen to anymore. I had to change podcasts. I just couldn't hear them anymore.
Oh, I've done that too quite a few too, yeah. And stuff, because it's like, no, don't tell people that. Don't tell people, you know. I mean, I heard that kind of crap too, because when I lived in Wilcox with my mom and stuff, I ended up having to go out to California and stuff. My mom, she ended up getting ill and stuff, so I went to live with my aunt. I had to go to a Southern Baptist church, though. They had me burning my Led Zeppelin records because they were saying devil crap on them backwards.
Right.
And if spirits talk to you, and, you know, my mom was supposedly evil, and I went... You know, the last time I walked in that church is when they sat there and told me that Gandhi was going to hell.
Oh.
Any God that put Gandhi in hell is not lying to him out of there.
Yeah.
You know, because that's not God to me.
No.
God's not about that. It's about life.
Exactly.
It's not about death.
Well, I guess we're at the end here.
I know
already.
Yeah.
Thank you so very much for sharing your experiences. I really appreciate that.
Well, thanks for letting me just rattle on about this.
Oh, of course. I'll have to have you on again sometime because it sounds like you still have so much more to say.
Oh, I'm writing a book.
So oh, nice.
Hopefully I can get it done and stuff and then I don't know.
Keep me posted.
I hope to. You take care, Kat. Well, I had a good time. Thank you.
I did as well.
Good luck on your show.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Before I end the episode tonight, there's a few people that I'd like to thank. If it wasn't for them, I would never have been able to get this podcast up and running. Jonathan Mallard, Odd to Newfoundland. Jim Mallard, of The Mallard Report, the fastest hour in paranormal talk radio. Justin Cancellari of Paratruth Radio, and last but certainly not least, Brian Anderson. The amount of information that you passed on to me is greatly appreciated. You guys are brilliant. Thank you so very much, and I really appreciate your friendship. Thank you, guys.
Paranormal Heart would like to extend a special thank you to PurplePlanet.com for supplying the music for the show. The views and opinions expressed on Paranormal Heart are those of the host and participants.
Well, we've made it to the end of another episode. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, take care of each other. And if you'd like to be on the show or have questions or comments, just drop me an email, paranormalheart13@gmail.com.